ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Continuing the 24 examples, the 24 gurus described by the Avadhut, which means the saintly person who's beyond the platform of having to follow the rules and regulations required for aspiring transcendentalists, a self-realized person who chooses not to follow the rules and regulations strictly. So there's in Avadhut's instructions to Prahlad Maharaj, as recorded in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and related by Lord Krishna to Uddhava. As you may have noticed, these examples, they're not directly about Krishna consciousness. They're not about devotion per se. They're more about detachment from this world. Examples of how we can be detached from this world and live like that. There's just the theoretical understanding of it and the practically how we are to live like that. Just like, for instance, the mountain is solid and steady, so we should be solid and steady, fixed in transcendence. So these instructions, they apply to devotees and to non-devotee transcendentalists also, as is also true of probably most of the instructions in Bhagavad Gita are applicable both to non-devotees. Actually, they're applicable to everyone, but some are specifically for devotees, and others are suitable for even non-devotee transcendentalists. Many instructions are about non-attachment, working according to one's duty. So let's go on with the next one. The next one is a negative example, something we can learn by observing something. We can learn what not to do. Not emulate this. We should be like the earth in tolerance, or we should aspire to be like that. We should not be like the pigeon. There is a specific story told here. It was a model love story, but there was a violent twist at the end, and it was an unhappy ending. In Sanskrit dramaturgy, there is a sutra or an instruction, an aphorism, Madhurena Samapyat. Whatever else happens before, during the drama, it should end sweetly. Let it end sweetly. But actual life is not like that. People, they may like to go to dramas to get some reassurance that actually life is good, despite everything. But life in this material world means suffering. When we say this, people say that we're being pessimistic, yeah? Pessimistic is realistic. However good things might seem to be, we have to die. We have to get born again to suffer again. Until we become detached from the idea of trying to enjoy in this material world and transfer our attachment to Krishna. So the example of the pigeon, this is a story told in some detail by Lord Krishna. I'll just summarize it. There was Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon. Their name is not given. They probably didn't have names. Pigeons, they're in the wild, and pigeons in the wild don't have names. If the domesticated pigeons may have names. There are not many domesticated pigeons these days. There used to be pigeon racing. In Hindi, that's called kabutarabaji. If you know that, kabutarabaji, keeping pigeons for racing. Mumbai mein hote abhi tak nahi. Finished. It used to be some kind of sport that people got some pleasure in. So they're wild pigeons. So we'll call them for the Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon, and they loved each other. Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon, they built a nice nest. Actually, pigeons don't build much of a nest. They just find some ledge or something and put a few sticks, and that's it. Anyway, for the sake of the story, we'll butter it up a bit. They built a nice nest, and then Mrs. Pigeon had her first pregnancy, and Mr. Pigeon would go out and bring all kinds of nice things, nuts and worms and all kinds of things for Mrs. Pigeon to eat as she got more and more pregnant, and they were in bliss. They were just loving each other like anything. And when the eggs popped out of Mrs. Pigeon's uterus, I think, or whatever, her womb, then they became more blissful. And when the eggs hatched and the little pigeons were there, their happiness knew no bounds. What a beautiful love story. How nice. They're so much in love. Mr. Pigeon works hard to bring back nice food for Mrs. Pigeon. Then the eggs hatch and they have little chicks. And then Mr. Pigeon and Mrs. Pigeon, they work hard throughout the day going out. They both go out to find all delicacies for the little chicks to eat. And then their happiness reaches its limit. They couldn't imagine such happiness as coming back with some squirming worm in their mouth to drop in the beak of the chicks who are with their mouths up and squawking. And when the pigeons drop the food into the chick's mouth, they feel fully satisfied. So this goes on for some time, and the little chicks get a little bigger. So they get to the extent where they can flutter down to the ground and take little Wright brothers' attempts at flying just a little bit up and then down again. They're just on the verge of becoming full-fledged pigeons. When one day, when Mr. and Mrs. Pigeon are both away foraging for food, tragedy strikes. A hunter, cruel hunter, one of those nasty men, one of the human species, comes and sets his net and captures all the little baby pigeons in his net. What can be done? Mrs. Pigeon comes back. She's the next one who comes before Mr. Pigeon. And she, understanding what has happened, squawks around the net as if to plea with the hunter. But the hunter's thinking how to capture her, and he does also. So she is in the net, and all the baby pigeons are in the net. And the hunter knows very well if there are baby pigeons and there's a mother pigeon, there's got to be a father pigeon too. So he waits around, and the father pigeon comes back. He's flying back thinking, oh, how wonderful life is. My darling wife, my darling children, I'm bringing another worm for them to eat. God is good. Life is good. Everything's so wonderful. Then he comes back and sees that his wife and his children are all caught in the net. So he lands on the branch of the tree and starts thinking, what to do, what to do, what to do. He realizes he's hopeless. There's nothing he can do. The hunter is merciless and will not let his family members go. He's completely incapable of protecting them. So thinking like this, he thinks, what is the purpose of living on? My whole life was this family. So he swoons and allows himself to fall into the net. And the hunter, feeling very satisfied, takes them all home to his wife. Just like the pigeons were bringing worms for their children to eat, so the hunter has brought a family of pigeons for his family to eat. So the moral of the story that the Avadhut teaches is don't be excessively attached. Family life is there. It's part of human life. We can't be totally against family life. Every one of us were born due to the mating of a male and a female, which should be done in civilized society within family life. But don't be excessively attached. Understand that death is going to take us away. However much we love our family, we're all going to be separated by death. So don't be inordinately attached. When Srila Prabhupada told this story, he gave it a different ending. Are you allowed to do that? Change the shastra? Well, Prabhupada can do it. He changed it. He said the pigeon, the male pigeon, came back. He saw that his family members were all caught in the net, and he thought, oh, now I've got nothing left. My material life is left. I'll take sannyas. So that's the intelligent version. What can be done? So don't be overly attached. One should be responsible, but don't be overly attached. How many families have we been born in? That comes up in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, in the narration of Chitraketu Maharaj, whose son, the son's name, Harsha Shok. Harsha means pleasure and Shok means lamentation. So the son died. At first he gave pleasure to the king, and then when he died he gave lamentation. So by the mercy of Narad Muni and Parvat Muni, that son was brought back to life. And Narada said to the boy who had been brought back to life, just see, here's your father. He's happy to see you. And the soul who didn't identify with that body said, which father? How many thousands of bodies have I been through? Who is my father? Who is my mother? So understanding smaran nityam nityatvam, everything in this world is temporary. One should not be attached. There are so many examples here. The moon waxing and waning. the temporality of everything in this world, we should consider. Another example. Yeah, we should consider that, not be attached to this world. Be attached to Krishna and utilize this life for self-realization. This rare human form of life. The next example is given of the python. How does the python get his food? What does he do? He doesn't do anything. Hardly. He stays in one place. And when food comes, then he jumps on it. That's all. Or falls on it. He doesn't even jump. A python just falls out of a tree. If some animal is going below, he'll just fall down on top of it and then swallow it. So this is this mode of life that this sadhu was following, the sadhu who advised Prahlad Maharaj. He didn't make any arrangements for eating. Just whatever food came to him, he would take. That's an advanced stage, because pythons, by the arrangement of nature, they can go for days and days without food. And then they get food, and then they digest. And that will last them for many days. But humans, it's difficult to go regularly without eating. We can fast for one day, 2 days, with practice more, but the normal requirement is to eat. And most people eat not just once a day, but 2 times or 3 times or 4 times or 5 times. In Chinese culture, it's common or normal. People eat 5 times a day. What I've seen in Thailand and Malaysia. And in the modern age, there's this whole thing of snacking. You eat your meal and take some chocolate in between, or some tea or coffee with biscuits in between. Spend so much time, so much arrangement for eating. But a python doesn't make arrangements. So this teaches this saintly person that don't be too anxious for making all arrangements. If one can be completely detached from making any arrangements, well, that is a high level. That's not generally practiced. The Madhavendra Puri used to do that. Ajagaravritti, he lived by the method of a python. If someone gave him food, he would eat. If he didn't get food, he wouldn't eat. That was his practice. Of course, in India, especially at that time, if a saintly person was going, people would come and offer to give him food. But it might mean sometimes going without food. But certainly a saintly person should not be spending all his time making arrangements for food. Srila Prabhupada told us that Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur would sometimes criticize some of his followers that they spend their whole life. What would they do? They'd get up in the morning, do a little bhajan, then they'd go out to collect rice and dal, potatoes. They come back, cook it, have another little bhajan while it was being offered, then eat it, take rest, and again cook in the evening. So half their day would go just in making arrangements for eating. But he said that's not the purpose of a spiritual life, that our whole life should not revolve around making arrangements for eating. Rather, we should minimize that. Of course, for distributing prasadam to the public, we may make big arrangements. But for ourselves, we should generally be quite frugal. Now, the next example is that of the sea. I already gave that when discussing water. You told me that verse. Apuryamanam achalapratishtam. Samudram, the sea, samudram. Samudram apa. Apa means water. Pravishanti yadvat tadvat kama yang pravishanti sarve. Sashantim apnoti nakama kami. So, this example is given by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that because just like the sea is full of water, so a saintly person is full of knowledge. He doesn't become disturbed. Even though so many material desires or so many material provocations may enter his mind, or just like big rivers enter the sea, he's not disturbed. The next example is given of the moth. This is compared to a man. Well, first of all, what's the example of the moth? The moth enters the flame, being attracted. It's somehow the moth, some kind of insects, flying insects, small moths, they become so attracted by fire that they fly right into it. And then what happens? They're burned. So due to attraction, by seeing, they're burned. So in the same way, a person becomes attracted. A man becomes attracted by the beautiful face of a woman or the beautiful form of the woman or the charms of a woman. He becomes attracted and is destroyed. Now, of course, the moth dies by entering the fire. We may say, well, the man doesn't die by becoming attracted to the woman, but his spiritual knowledge, any possibility of spiritual knowledge, is destroyed if one becomes over-attracted by womanly charms, or even at all attracted, because to be at all attracted is maya, that is illusion. That is not to say that a man may not accept a woman as a wife as a religious principle. That's something else. But if one is attracted by the charms of a woman, then he loses all his good sense, all his sense of discrimination. An example of that in the Bhagavatam is Ajamil, who had accepted a wife, as arranged by his parents, had accepted a wife in terms of religious principles, and was living with her according to religious principles. But he became attracted by the sexual attractions of another woman, and his spiritual life was destroyed. But there's one other consideration. One other consideration is Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat, that because he had developed some Krishna consciousness, Krishna ultimately protected him. Otherwise, his spiritual life was completely destroyed. Just like a moth enters a fire, he entered the fire of lust. And nothing that anyone could say to him would put him back on the right track. The next example is that of the honeybee. Does anyone know the word in Sanskrit for honeybee? Madhumakshika. is one word, yeah, or Madhukar. Madhukar means one who makes honey, so honeybee. And you've heard of Madhukari, begging a little food from each house just to maintain the body. So the example of the python's been given, who doesn't make any arrangement for food. And another example is that of the honeybee, who just takes a little pollen from every flower. You've seen the bees, they'll fly, they'll go to one flower, and often they'll hardly stop. They'll just alight for a second, and then again onto the next one. They just take a little pollen from each flower. So in this way, a saintly person, he may go to several houses. The rule in Vraja, the greater Vrindavan area, is that they may, someone begging like this, they may go to 7 houses, that's all. And if before going to 7 houses they get enough, they stop. And generally people won't give very much. They'll give maybe 1 chapati with a little sabji like that. They won't give very much. So in this way they don't become a burden on the householders. The householders want to support the renowned saintly people, but at the same time they have their own limitations, so they just give a little. So in this way, the saintly person may support his body or get enough food for his body. Another analogy can be drawn from this. It's just like an intelligent person takes the essence of all the different scriptures. And that's actually been done for us by the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Samsthapako. They're described as they gathered from all the different scriptures the essence of all dharma. And thus we have Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu with quotes from many scriptures to establish the principles of pure devotional service. Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, of course they mostly derive their teachings from Srimad Bhagavatam, but from a very wide range. And you'll find in Chaitanya Charitamrita quotes from so many different scriptures to support all the points that are made. Maybe even from scriptures which are not directly devotional. But if there's some point which is made there which supports devotion, in that particular instance it may be taken. From Padma Purana, we have many important quotes, but not that we study the Padma Purana in general. Most followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu won't make a deep study of Padma Purana because it's not all directly focused on pure devotion. So take the essence of all different scriptures. But anyway, our acharyas have already done that for us. They already made the honey. So we can just take it. Bhakti Rasamrita. Honey nectar. Another important point about the honeybee. Don't collect too much. There's another example coming up just shortly about that. Don't collect too much. You'll get in trouble if you collect too much. Atyahara. Rupa Goswami warns about eating too much and collecting too much. From time to time, we see reported in the news that some Baba or whatever, some guru in India, they've been arrested for some improper behavior. I sometimes wonder if someone has seen that by their popularity they've got big ashram, big assets, and then the police or whatever, they think, let's put them in prison and divide up all the assets between us. I suspect this may be going on in some cases. So it's very dangerous to collect money. Srila Prabhupada warned, don't keep money in the bank. If you get money, spend it for Krishna. Print books. Of course, Srila Prabhupada also said to use that for building temples. But Srila Prabhupada was quite insistent on that. Don't stock money. Money will bring problems. Then someone will want to steal it. Either the government people or some crooks or our own devotees may become tempted by that money. Then there'll be quarrel over who can... There'll be quarrel among the devotees about who can be the controller of that money. Will attract the wrong kind of people. Money causes so many problems if it's not used for Krishna. So don't collect too much. Of course, for Krishna's service, we can collect any amount of money because there's no limit to Krishna's service. But then it must all be used in Krishna's service. As Srila Prabhupada said, if we use one farthing for our own personal sense gratification, that will take us to hell. And with that sweet ending, is that sweet? Not very sweet ending. We'll finish there. For now, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Unless you have any question or comment here. Like to say anything?
Sthul.
Your notepad is called Sthul. Means fat or gross, right? Hare Krishna.